We're glad you're joining us here at NRCC Online. This is a recording of our community gathering, as we do each week, to think together about the spiritual journey. At the end of the lesson, we open the floor for discussion. We'd love to hear what you're thinking, too. Go to our community's Facebook page, post your thoughts. The lesson, This Summer, How to Change Your World. If you missed part one, it's first change yourself, change your brain in particular, deal with the brain tricks that tend to waylay us. Part two that we continue today is change the nature of your relationships or develop a bigger version of we. And then part three will be change your relationship to power, or as you'll see when you study the Enneagram, we all have this tendency, this way to give away our power. Don't give away your power. Now, my hope for today is that this lesson is encouraging. I hope that it's like that song that we sing from time to time, You Can Do This Hard Thing. Because yes, it is a hard thing to change the world. It is a hard thing to change our brains. It is a hard thing to change our relationships. It is a hard thing to move into a larger version of we. It is. But today's message is, you can do this hard thing. We can do it. We've got the tools to help us. We've got a community to support us. We can do this hard thing. So we've been talking about the brain tricks that keep the other being the other. That'll stand in the way of a bigger version of we. We've been talking about the brain tricks that fragment us into smaller and smaller versions of we. And given that you've got those brain tricks going on in you just like I do, yes, this is a hard thing. And there are a whole bunch of people out there degrading a whole bunch of other people, and it's just in the air that we breathe. There is this national shouting match going on that's stirring up a lot of anger, which is causing real people living real lives to feel real pain. Chanting, send her back, touches a deep wound and dredges up real hurt in real time, lived in real families with real children in the real world. So it's a hurting moment, and it's an angry moment, and that's what's in the air. And it's very difficult for us not to be triggered in this moment. And so, yes, it is a hard thing. And then the minister stands up and talks about a bigger version of we, and our minds go to, what does that mean? What does it mean? Does that mean that I have to, if I am a conservative person, I have to have relationship with people who support these four liberal congresswomen, and I should somehow be shoehorned into doing something that I don't agree with? Is that what a bigger version of me means? Or what, if I'm going to have a bigger version of me, I should be condoning of or silent in the face of those people who are making those chants? When it comes down to the practicalities of a bigger version of we, yes, this is a hard thing. But the point of today's lesson, we can do this hard thing. The idea of a bigger version of we, this week for a lot of people, has brought up a very practical question. I've probably had four of these conversations. On the one hand, we do want a bigger version of we. We do want to broaden our relationships, expand them to the neighbor, even to the enemy. But if we just take these last few weeks as a sample case, then knowing that that chant is hurtful to a lot of people and that it dredges up a lot of hurt from the past and then gives it power all over again, Doug, what should I be doing when people are being harmed? Does a bigger we mean that I stand by silently because I want to keep the peace? Or, Doug, when my whole political perspective as a conservative gets painted with the racist brush and I don't get a chance to be heard, what should I do? Just stand by silently? Is that what it means to have a bigger version of we? You saw people grappling with this on our Facebook group this week. And if you're like me, maybe you learned a new word, doxed. Didn't know that word before. But remember what this lesson's about. Yes, it is a hard thing. But we can do this hard thing. Part of being able to do this hard thing is acknowledging how hard it really is. I hope that you have heard clearly in our community by now that silence in the face of injustice or inactivity in the face of injustice is never a viable option for us as Christians. If we follow Jesus, the question for us is never, not participating in healing the world. The question for us is only how. How best? Shall we approach healing the world this way, or shall we approach healing the world that way? Will doing this make more difference, or will doing that make more difference? I read this book a couple years ago, and I've suggested it on our reading list, Doing Good Better. It's not really about what we're talking about, but it's a premise. And the premise is, if you're going to do good, if you're going to put the energy and the time into the dollars into doing good, then you have somewhat of an obligation to do good well. Which means you've got to figure out what's actually going to make a difference in the world. Because there's a whole lot of doing good that's really just about getting a squirt of dopamine into our heads. We feel good, but we're actually not making change in the world around us. And the premise of the book is don't just do good in order to feel good. If you're going to put the time and energy into doing good, make sure that it matters. Well, that's an encouragement to us as we're thinking during this lesson that if we're going to put our time and energy and our learning into difference making, we should be putting our efforts into things that will actually move the needle and bring about the change that the world needs and bring about the change that people need in this world. And that then becomes our question if we follow Jesus. Silence or inaction? No. How we go about making a difference? That's our question. You might have seen this article floating around on the internet this week. It's the president of kind of the leading Christian magazine in the nation, Christianity Today, rehearsed for us our tradition's heritage by looking at prophets who in the past have stood before the court and prophets who have stood out in the wilderness. Both of them speak to a different social context, but both say it is to us to step toward harm when it's happening and to bring healing to the harm, to right what is wrong and to heal what is broken. And that's true for us as Christians, even if we live in a supercharged political landscape, because that is our thing. And this guy continues, once we know the lives and the stories of people of color, once we know the code words and how they have been used and what they mean, we know that those chants hurt real people. And our mandate is when people are hurt is to move toward the hurt and to bring healing to that hurt. We can't do much about Greenville. That's on a national stage. But where do you work? Is there a person who has been hurt by that chant in your neighborhood? Who do you know that you could begin relationship building with? Part of changing our relationships and part of having a bigger version of we is learning the stories and the lives and the experiences of others who are not us. Do that and we begin to know how hurtful and how harmful things like those chants really are. When harm is done, it is to us, if we follow Jesus, to move toward that harm, bringing healing with us. Which brings up the question of what, and it brings up the question of how. What should we do, and how should we do it? What does Here Now Small Doable look like that will actually move the needle and actually make a difference? And what I hope you've been hearing me suggest in this lesson series is that our brain tricks are going to skew our answer to that question and not in a positive way. Now, let me commiserate with you a little bit because of the minister that you all have. So when you got me for a minister, you got this liability, and that is that I am slow. Now, if you know me particularly well, you are probably thinking to yourself, that sounds crazy, because if anything, I always feel to myself like I am trying to go faster than things can actually go, and people always tell me I am going faster than things can actually go. But I am slow in this sense. I really do want to build things to last. And that, I think, happened because I got very weary very early on spending time and energy and money doing things that did not move the needle. doing things that didn't change things, doing things that didn't make a difference. So the liability that you all have to deal with when you deal with me is that I am moving so slowly that here I am doing a lesson that is totally about fully engaging in a lifetime of making a difference in the world, and what people hear is, we should just be nice so that we can hold on to a bigger version of we. And we should just suppress some of our interior instincts in order to have a bigger version of we. And we should just stand by silently when people are being hurt. A less diplomatic way of saying what I've been hearing this week is, Doug, this is outrageous, what's going on, and we should be outraged. And why aren't we screaming, and why aren't we doing something? And again, I feel for you, because here's the great big answer that this preacher guy has for the outrage and the screaming. Hey, come to a potluck. Come learn to do listening circles together so that we can participate in them and develop the skills and the capacities to be able to function in an arena that is actually going to make a difference in the world. Because as we begin breaking down the divide, and as we begin to get to know people that we don't know, and as we begin building relationship with people who are not like us, that is the context in which substantive change actually happens. And to be honest, I've got a lot of experience in this thing, and screaming has a very limited reach. Outrage has a very limited shelf life. So instead, what I've been doing is I've been eating. I've been eating with people. There's a rabbi that I've met in Cary, and he and I are becoming friends over food. And we're talking together about how we can help our congregations become friends one with another, probably over food, because both of our congregations need to learn what it's like to be not us. In that instance, for us to learn what it's like to be not Christian, not Protestant. I'm eating with people. I'm eating with a couple of ministers from African American churches, becoming friends and talking about how we help our congregations become friends so that we can learn what it's like to be not us, what it's like to be not white, what it's like to not wake up every day with built-in advantage, which is all very slow stuff and very under-the-radar stuff, but very necessary if we're actually going to make a difference in the world and not get hijacked by our brain tricks. Because to be honest, once us has become a broader version of us, our brain tricks that we saw last week work really hard to keep us and keep them. When we have a bigger version of us, now our brains actually start to work to advantage us in being able to move forward. Now here's the thing. I know from experience that when we show up to build relationship across the divides, there are triggers lurking everywhere. That's why some of the lesson last week focused on why we tend to see one another and our brains automatically categorize one another into kind. That kind, you remember that part from the lesson last week? We categorize one another and we do this microsecond measuring and evaluation, and we do that at the same time that it is being done to us. Somebody else's brain is making an assessment of, an evaluation of, a categorizing of us. And that is trigger territory. We are triggered when we do the judging, triggered when we do the categorizing, and we are triggered when we ourselves are categorized. So this is a hard thing. I know it's a hard thing. But what I'm saying to us today is we can do this hard thing. It's even worse because we don't do that categorizing that our brains automatically do in a vacuum. We do it with all the energy that is stored up from all of our shared cultural, societal narratives that are all working at the same time that we are living out our lives. Those things are pouring energy into this categorizing, triggering experience. And so, yes, it is this hard thing. But we can do it. we can become the kind of people who can actually show up in our worlds and show up at our jobs and show up at our homes with our own group when our own group has lost its way, and with the other group when we are building relationship across the divides. We can be the kind of people who can show up in that context and eat together and work together and figure out a way forward together. We can do this. But to do it, we have to be able to handle a very triggering environment. And here's the thing, that triggering environment isn't going away. It's going to be here tomorrow. And it's going to be here next month and next year. Maybe not at the, I pray to God, not at the heightened degree that it's at right now, but it will be here. And so the question for us is, what will we need to become to be the kind of people who can step into a triggering environment and be able to make substantive change? The reason I say we can do it is because we've got the tools and we've got a community to support one another in the doing. But building those tools and building that community of support, building something that actually will move the needle, is slow. It's slow work. Outrage is much more immediately gratifying. But if we're going to build something that has a chance of lasting and prevailing through this storm of ugly, slow is the way to go. And no, we cannot be silent when racial harm happens. We must build relationship. That is what we do. We move toward relationship. The chance that we saw this week ought not to be triggering a response on Facebook. It ought to be triggering the beginnings of a friendship. We cannot be silent when harm is happening to people of different sexual orientation. No, but what we do is we don't scream and yell about it. We go begin to build relationship with people of different sexual orientation. And it's the same true with Muslim people. And same thing with women who are angry at the long, long night in which we collectively have tolerated sexual violation. We move toward the relationships that make a bigger version of we. And we do that because that's the context in which we find the power to actually bring change to our worlds. But I don't know if I've mentioned it, but that is difficult. It is a hard thing to do. We need to become the kind of people who can function in brain trick triggering relationships. Which, if we are liberal, means that we must be the kind of people who can move toward conservatives and understand their anger at so long being misrepresented in the press. And if we are conservative, it means we must be the kind of people who can move toward liberals and understand the deep anger at how slowly history repairs systems that are doing harm. And the kind of people who can do that can make change in the world. But it happens person to person. It happens life to life. And it happens story to story. So when we are facing this moment, no, we do not do nothing. But what we do is difficult. And so consequently, we skip it. We move into relationship with the other who is experiencing the harm and the outgrouping. So yes, it is difficult, but we can do this hard thing. Now, I've been down this road before, and I have done it with people who were not able to function in a supercharged environment, who had not done the kind of work that we talk about when we talked about the change of brain section of this lesson. Consequently, we're not able to change their relationships and live in a bigger version of we. And I sympathize because brain tricks are powerful. And triggers are triggering. And chemicals do course through our bodies, and they do create feelings and yank us into those thought algorithms that we talked about last week. And we do end up where our whole society ends up in this great big screaming match that isn't moving the needle. So that's why we take the long way around, trying to build to last, putting foundations in place that will make it possible to actually change the world, to actually make a difference. And look at what we have to help us. a whole basket of spiritual practices to change our brains. That piece of paper that we've been handing out, that looking, planning your year, how am I going to participate in what will transform my life? This is how we get from here to there. And this whole thing we keep talking about with IAF, have spent a lot of time and energy moving us toward what could potentially be a ministry that will help us build relationship across race and across politics and across religion, so we have a chance of being in the bigger version of we that actually enable us to make a difference in the world. What we have is here and now and small and doable being served to us on a silver platter. There is a way you can participate, we can participate in being part of the healing of racial inequity and racial harm. There is a way in which we can actually participate, be part of the healing of sexual harm and sexual violation, be part of the healing of the hurts that so many have sustained because they're gay or they're lesbian or they don't fit into a gender norm. The long way around is about becoming the kind of people who can enter the kind of relationships where healing the world is possible. But we cannot underestimate the triggering power of triggers. But we can do this hard thing. So you've been hearing me ask people to disagree during What Are You Thinking? I'm actually looking for the yeah, but part. Some people have been accommodating me. So I was talking to a few people. This is kind of a consolidation of several conversations in our community about how IAF works across the divides and the things that are coming up. And this person's referenced a story that I told a few weeks ago. The two ministers agreed to, they disagreed on several things, but found a thing they could agree on. They built relationship, and they were able to work together on that. And this person said, well, you know, Doug, that's a pretty story, but I know what's going to happen because I've seen it before. Even if there is good intent, even if we are trying our best to work on things together, sure as we are sitting here, some white person is going to say something that will be racially insensitive. And when that happens, it's going to hit the fan. And even if that white person says, I'm sorry, I didn't understand, can you explain it to me? Even that causes compounding triggering troubles because people of color have long had to carry the load of racial inequity, but then on top of that have also had the responsibility of solving the problem of racial inequity, explaining the way forward, swallowing the emotional cost of the triggering environment. So you got to know, Doug, that you can't but make the problem and you can't fix the problem, damned if you do and damned if you don't. And I know just enough about myself to know, this person said, yeah, that's going to trigger me. That is a triggering environment. And that happens. And you watch it playing out on social media all the time. And you watch it happening in the national media all the time. It happens. It's something we're afraid of because it's a thing. And it's a real thing. And it isn't going to be gone tomorrow. It's still going to be here tomorrow because we'll still have the same brains that we've got tomorrow. We'll still have the same culturally accepted narratives we have tomorrow. We'll have the same things in place tomorrow, and it isn't going to go away. This is a triggering environment, and anybody who's paying attention knows that you've got these kinds of fears at least tacitly, maybe even explicitly, because a bigger version of us is scary. Community that is not conformity is rare for a reason, because community that is not conformity is scary. It's triggering. We talk all the time about oneness that is not sameness. There's a reason why oneness that is not sameness is such a rarity. It's because it's difficult. It is very, very difficult. And so for many, the path of least resistance is just to avoid the arena altogether because there be dragons. Triggers trigger us. Brain tricks trick us. Somebody just try pushing an ideology on me that's not my ideology. Just try and use a bigger version of we to try and shoehorn me either into conforming so that I can keep the peace or just going silent and back away and watch me be triggered. What if we get into this IAF thing and everybody gets on board with some good thing and it's not my idea of good? I know what happens next. ganging up, pressuring, group out-grouping, leaving behind. And I know myself, if somebody starts shoving something down my throat, I'm going to get unhappy. And what if we go into this arena and we lose this precious thing that is our community? So that's a thing. And it's a real thing because it's out there. And it makes any prospect that we would talk about very, very difficult. So I don't want us to think that this is not a hard thing. This is a hard thing. I just want us to think we can do this hard thing. I think we can. So the long way around is about getting ready to do the hard thing. The long way around is about becoming the kind of people who can do the hard thing. Jesus talked about this. He had a saying that said, you know, when you go to war, make sure you count your soldiers first. Or when you're going to build a tower, make sure you count your bricks first. Make sure before you get into something that you know what that something is going to cost you and be relatively sure that you can do that. Well, changing our relationships and having a bigger version of us, we need to know what we're getting into. We're getting into a triggering environment. And the fact that that environment won't stay secluded anymore is why our whole society is up in arms. Because we can't any longer do what we used to be able to do, stay in these nice little segmented parts of the society where we didn't have to interact with each other, and now we have to interact with one another, and it's causing us to get triggered in all of these instances that happen and happen and happen and happen. So even in the bigger version of we, when we walk into that context, we come with our scripts in our heads. Even with the effort to work on a bigger version of we, when we walk into it, we carry our brain tricks with us. Which really leaves us with three choices. We can do our best to stay out of the arena. Just don't go there and give the whole thing a wide berth. But as I said, that's getting harder and harder to do because our world is getting more and more interconnected. The other is to enter the arena, but just default to our inherited scripts and our brain tricks. Enter the arena in order to win, in order to subdue all comers with the righteousness of our cause and the brilliance of our arguments. Or the third option is we could follow Jesus and we could build the power of a bigger version of we. And let me tell you, that's the hardest. It's the long way around. It requires that we do the work necessary to become the kind of people who can function in a trigger-rich environment and do so while sustaining an elevated vision of what the world could be and what the world should be. Now, next week, we're going to talk about some more tools to help us rise above our brain tricks, to do what we talked about a moment ago, just getting our brain tricks to actually work for us in this bigger version of we. But today, what I hope you hear is, it is difficult, but we can do this. We have to count our bricks before we build a tower. But the interesting thing is, we know where our bricks are. We have the tools to function in this demanding environment. We have the tools to be able to normalize this process and to move forward as agents of change in our worlds. We can do this hard thing. And so, indwelling Spirit of God, may we be changed people able to participate in the changing of our world as we follow Jesus. Amen.
If these recordings help you move forward on your spiritual journey, we hope you'll take an ownership stake in the community and support the health and well-being of the community. You can go to our website, northraleighcommunitychurch.org. The donate button is at the top of the page on your computer's browser, at the bottom on your phone's browser. Thank you.